You beauty. Timmy G's Tyre Power Time Machine. Look who I've got. Dazzling Daryl Wakeland. Yay! How are you, mate? Now, I'm just going to read out a couple of numbers here, which is quite amazing. 24 games for the Maggies, which included a flag in 94, and the Jack Odie medal, mind you. 115 games with the Saints between, I think that was 95 and 2000. And then 146 games with the Power, including the world-famous flag in 04. Just phenomenal. 261 games overall, along with your twin brother, Shane Wakeland, considered the Hemsworths of Port Adelaide, basically. You do not get two better-looking blokes that walked into this hallowed change rooms here at Alderton Oval. Now, welcome, mate. How are you?
Yeah, really good, Tim, and thanks. This is probably, this will go straight onto my CV. Absolute career highlight, mate. No doubt. Looking forward to it.
Oh, God. Look, I always like to talk about the blokes Port Adelaide journey, but also their connection to it. Now, I've looked up a couple of things about you. Now, born Wyala, on a farm in Kimber, I think wheat was the main product there, moved to Port Lincoln, so we're going to get on to why, and then into Port Adelaide. Yeah. So tell us about all of that. Why were you born in Wyala? Probably no hospitals in Kimber, I'll take it.
There was, actually.
There was a hospital in Kimber. So give us that little story about how, and of course, who was old, Shane or Daryl, which, how did it all go down?
Oh, I'm the oldest, Timmy, thank you for that. Good. I'm 20 minutes old, identical twins.
20?
20 minutes. Either side of midnight, I think you knew that. So we got separate birthdays, which was always a nice thing growing up.
For twins?
Twins, you had a separate birthday. So not so much. Not so good for Shane. He knew exactly what he was getting for his birthday when he woke up on the spot.
Because you're 11th of August.
It was just in a different colour.
You're 11th of August.
11th of August. Yeah. And Shane, obviously, on the 12th. So. But,
isn't that nice, though? That's amazing. Yes. Your mum must have been... Did she hang on? Or she just sort of... Just...
I think there was... They were big babies. Two 8-pound babies.
Twins at 8 pounds apiece.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Wow.
But Shane was breech burst, so come a little bit later.
Wow.
He got out. Anyway, long story short, that was at the Wyala Hospital. My father was, he was really the farmer of the family back in Kimber. And his older brother came back to the farm, and as used to happen back then, he ended up taking over the farm. So through them years, early 70s, wasn't enough work. He went to Wyala, did his baller making apprenticeship. So that was, I think it was around 71.
Yeah.
And then, and mum was still in Kimber, young pregnancy, and had Mike in 1972. So we're all living in Wyala. And then we come 2 years later. So dad was in, I think, his third year of his apprenticeship, making about $16 a week. And
as a baller. He's got maker, three boys.
Yeah, he's got three boys. And,
wow.
And that was. So end of 1974, and he finished his apprenticeship that year. We moved back about 6 months later in sort of early 75. And dad was always, he was a farmer at heart, still is.
Yeah.
And so he worked on and off farms. That the original family farm was sort of halfway between Kimber and Wyala.
Okay.
And dad's older brother was working there. But dad, we always leased farms. We had a piggery for a while. We've still got a farm down in Copio, down in Port Lincoln. So that was really to go back to Kimber. Family support. Mum's parents were living in Kimber, and it was just the perfect place to really grow up.
A lot of Wakelands on the EP, because some people say they're the cane toads of the peninsula.
It was actually.
They're everywhere.
I'll tell you what, the name will be very strong for years to come. Dad had two sisters, three brothers. So in the grandchildren, there was 16 grandchildren.
Wow.
There was 14 grandsons,
all
within a space of about 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
So the eldest was a granddaughter, and the youngest was a granddaughter, and there was 14 boys in between.
That's
so
incredible.
You can imagine every Christmas and Easter, we're all going at it pretty hard. And just an amazing upbringing, and great friends now still with all them cousins that we grew up with in a fantastic environment in Kimber.
When did you get down to Lincoln? What was that move about? Was that about footy?
Look, it was a bit, Look, we had an amazing, through that time, Dad was coach of Kelly Football Club in the Kimber League. So we got to the age of about 14. My older brother Mike moved down here as a 16-year-old. So he come down.
Dad played already.
He was a very, very good footballer. Sort of a, he was a full forward, centre-half forward type player. So when he moved here, there wasn't much going on. I think there may have going into secondary school. There wasn't a lot of kids in Kimber. So made the move down to Port Lincoln. Better school.
You guys are...
Great experience.
Because both of you, we'll get onto that a bit later, you're both pretty intelligent blokes as far as the schoolastic stuff goes.
Yeah, look, we worked hard and as you did back in the day, you wanted to do well for your parents and you wanted to work hard. And we were pretty diligent kids and... But that was one of the best move ever, going to Port Lincoln. And I really thank Mum and Dad for that. We've got some of the great mates to this day. There's about eight of us who get on. We catch up every year and do a trip, fishing trip or whatever.
Who are you playing footy with there?
So we play for Boston's. And so we had a strong affiliation with the Indigenous boys down there. Mallee Park, through the time we were down there, struggled to get a few of the junior sides. So we had a lot of their boys come across and, the Burgoyne boys were sort of there at the time and there was the Millers I was playing against, Graham Johncock's old man. And so a lot of them families, Wanganine families, Burgoyne families, Davey families, just amazing footballing families. So that was a really amazing experience. And we become great friends and great mates with a lot of them boys and their fathers and uncles from that era. It's a really interesting time before we moved across here at the end of year 11.
So you come over at the end of year 11 and I know you're very scholastic, so you decide to go to Woodville High of Advanced Education, where I went my good self, of course, as a few years earlier. But you spend year 12 there, don't you? And do your studies and get through Woody High.
Yeah, so we obviously, before coming across, making the Eyre Peninsula sides, and we'd come across here for Port Adelaide Cup and Samboy Cup, which was known back in the under-15s carnival. So it was a bit of a thing. Bobby Clark, we used to keep in touch with through my older brother. He got my older brother down to Adelaide. And we become great friends with the Clayton family and become great friends with Chris Natt, who had taken over Bobby's role of junior development on the Eyre Peninsula. We're obviously, we followed in the footsteps really a lot of the great players. Remember there, Critchie Phillips, Darryl Borlase, Darren Smith.
Amazing.
Chalmers, some amazing football
players. So good to us, wasn't it?
It was. And so we come across here and, the club was kind enough to pay for our board. We boarded with a lady out at Largs North, and that was the start of our journey, really, and through 17s and then into 19s, and we're lucky enough to play in a 19s premiership at the end of the first year.
I think I saw a photo the other day where the 91 Port Adelaide under 19 premiership side, and all three boys are in.
Yeah.
That was a proud moment for Mum and Dad.
Absolutely. It was probably one of our most enjoyable years of football. We come at, it was our Till Cup year. Russell Ebert
coached.
Yeah. And really, he backed me in as I was a ruckman at the time. So myself and Troy Olsen actually rucked. Along with Sam Smart, who played a bit with the Crows and Carlton, but we were the three ruckmen in Darwin. So we won the championship that year. And when I got back, I was playing 17s, got back and then stepped into the 19s under Malcolm Maiden. So Neville Tierley had been coaching us in the first half of the year.
Yep.
Come back after Till Cup and then I played full forward, centre-half forward under Malcolm Maiden in the under 19s.
Forward, centre-half forward?
Yeah. So that was sort of, I'd sort of always played ruck in the juniors. And so that was a really fun time, coming through guys like Braden Lowe, Shea Cockatoo Collins. Obviously, both my brothers playing together, Damien Sheen, guys like that. So it was a really fun time, and we were lucky enough to win that 91 premiership.
How do you get down the defence then? If you've come from the ruck into full forward, centre forward, how do you get in defence?
Well, I'd never played down back really, and so that was my first taste in the forward line, the back half of the 19s, and then going into the next year was my first league. Real pre-season as a sort of 18-year-old, 17 and a half. So you come into that year, and really had my mind set on, and I played that 92, start of 92 season, played a few pre-season games. And then as the year went on, I just sort of struggled a bit. I just probably lost a little bit of confidence. And the year fizzled out a bit as we went into 92. But had a very strong pre-season over 92, 93. And I missed out on the 92 draft. Shane was drafted in the 92 draft, along with a lot of other guys here. There was the Shane Bond and Braden Lyle and Troy Bond and Hully, and a lot of them guys got drafted through that period. Shea Cockatoo Collins.
So. Was that the period where they didn't have to go straight away?
That's right, yeah. Right. So they
hung around.
They had the list of 52 back then.
Yeah.
I don't think you got contracted unless you were in that sort of top 30,
yeah,
which
right.
A lot of us weren't. You know, we were young, you were young kids. So, yeah, a lot of guys just stayed home because all you want to do was get into the league team. A lot of us guys were only playing reserves and just out of under 19s.
So you're 18, because I do want to touch on your 18th birthday. Because 18's obviously a big milestone in anybody's life, but you guys were living at Woodville, I reckon.
That's right. Southern End Girls of Woodville, yeah.
Yes.
Glen Lossie Street.
Glen Lossie, correct. And 92, of course, is the year Nathan Buckley is dominating the competition at the time, but we come to your house for the 18th birthday.
Correct.
And she's a show. And it's on for young and old. even I at 26 had my eyes open.
How would you call it? It was a country 18.
It was a country 18. That's a great description.
Yeah, you put a heap of grog there.
Yeah.
You get a crew around, there's probably a fire drum, and you just go for it.
Yeah, and it's the first time I ever seen the broomstick, head on the broomstick, run around in circles and just off afterwards and collapse some of the stuff that was going on. But yeah. I do remember distinctly that late in the night, a few of the boys started playing cricket with your lemon tree.
Yes.
So they're grabbing the lemon off the tree, bowling it down and batting, and you know, everybody's having a bit of a laugh and all that. So I thought, I'll have a crack at this. And then this big, tall, skinny left-handed fella came in and bowled one of the lemons, and I just heard the whoosh go past me. I didn't see it.
About
160. He hit the back fence on the full, and I just declared, went off, and I found out later that was Mark Harity.
Mark Harity, who was great mates with Braden Lowe and a few boys from the Lefevre Peninsula.
Yeah.
So Hags was a great man, but yeah.
Because he could throw them down.
He could throw them down.
Especially at about 12:30 a.m. in the backyard with a lemon. But that particular night too, I remember, and I'm getting onto this crazy time in your life, you guys, all the EP boys, mixing with now all these guys that are like Braden Lyle and the rest of it from the peninsula, and this absolute bubbling of what I would say fun coming to life. And Nathan Buckley, of course, was dominating here, but he was around your age. He was sort of 20, just a couple of years difference and the rest of it. And that particular night, I'd been teasing him all day about his stats because he didn't have that big a game.
Yeah.
And I said, I reckon 9-4. And he was, no, I had 12-6, I had 12-6. And I said, mate, I reckon 9 kicks, 4 handles. Well, that night at your party, I was into him about it. And I went past the Esky, grabbed a beer and said, 9-4. And he looked around and said, what time is it? And it was 2 a.m. He said, Sonny Mull will be out. Took off down the road.
True story.
Yeah, true story. The bloke throwing him out, grabbed it off him, ripped it back and said, told you, 12-6. But he was mad like that, wasn't he?
He was. He was obsessed. We spent a lot of time together in that 92. It was a wonderful scene. Like you said, it was a lot of them Air Peninsula boys. It was a bubbling fun, as you call it to me. And a lot of the Lefevre Peninsula boys, Brian Lowe and all the mates, and a lot of them boys who we'd come through 17s and 19s with. And we were just having a great time. And Bucks was a part of that. Bucks had played some league games at the end of 91. And a lot of 19s and reserves. And then it was just an amazing year. You could just feel it building as the season went on. We were having a lot of fun. We were just naive young kids, really, at the time. We were serious about our training. But on the weekends, we just had lots of fun every weekend.
There was a place that a few of the boys were living at down on the Esplanade. I never actually quite knew who was in it? Who was actually renting it? I think they called it Babe Watch at Boat Watch. Because it was right on the peninsula. Yeah. It was right as you go up Bower Road, turn on the Esplanade, and it was just a great view and a great party house, as it turned out. Not that you'd ever say that to the landlord. But I never actually knew who was living in it. Who actually lived in it?
Well, we'd live there most weekends. There was, I mean, Bucks would drop in, the Baldessera boys, Mick Gaffney was sort of, he was the main organiser. Daryl Paul pretty much lived
Gaffney,
there.
Mick Gaffney
is
the Van Wilder.
He
was the Van Wilder of that era and of that house, I'll tell you.
He
seemed to always organise it, but not be...
That's right.
In it, if it went wrong.
He was the puppeteer. He'd be pulling the strings and making sure there was a lot of fun happening. And then he'd just quietly take himself away. But Daryl Paul would live there 3 nights a week. And it was a really, really fun time. A few of the boys lived a couple of houses down, so there was always a little bit going on around there. Had some great shows.
Well, I know Nathan always says that if he could have another year again in his life, it would be 92.
Yeah,
he loved it that much. Yeah. It was good for you. But when did you think you have to get a bit more dinkum about what you're doing? Because I reckon there was a turning point upstairs. Yourself and Shane and a couple of the other younger fellas came up to Rowan Smith Corner, as I always like to call it, where we'd stand after a game. And you came up and started talking about, you know, what have we got to do to make it? And I reckon you were already starting to think, no, we've got to get thinking now.
Well, I remember hearing a conversation, Brian Fairclough, and you made some comments, and I suppose you're coming through there, you're a bit naive to really the real seriousness of Port Adelaide. As much as the coaches, Neville Tierley, Malcolm Maiden, would tell you about it and the rivalries that we had in the league, you got to find it out for yourself. You got to find that real grit, and you got to get, you know, get knocked down, and you got to have these experiences. 93, I ended up doing a knee with cartilage, and I missed 12 weeks of footy. It was coming off having injuries at the end of 92, missing the draft. Shane had got drafted, and then at the start of 93, I was going to get drafted to Carlton as a centre half forward, and then Adelaide picked me up. And then within a month or so, I did my knee. So it was a real washout. And it was really probably the end of 93. I'm thinking, well, I've got a twin brother who's been drafted. All these other mates have been drafted to clubs. I'm sitting here. I've been delisted now by the Crows. And I said, well, I've just got to give it a really good chance. And that was the end of 93. I had one of my best pre-seasons leading into 94. And
because the gap has opened at centre half back.
Yeah, pretty handy.
There's a bloke called Greg Phillips.
He was a pretty handy player.
And not a bad player, but sent up back for, you know, 752 years, and he's now retired. There is a gap. Who's taking it? Now, the funny thing was, like, you're saying, like, 93 was not even a year for you, really, with the knee injury and the like.
Yeah.
Did you see that gap? Did you go for that gap? Did somebody tell you to go for that gap?
I distinctly remember...
It's like good luck playing back up the Greg.
And there was some good young guys coming through. And it was more... For me, it was more... I'm good enough to be an AFL player. I just need to get fit as I can to give myself the best opportunity to give myself... get selected in the first round. And that's all I kept thinking about. Every time I stepped under the track, I'd ride my bike around. Every time I stepped on the track, I thought, I'm just going to train as well as I can. And that's all I did. I just kept looking session after session. It's probably the fittest I'd been ever at that stage, and probably one of the fittest pre-seasons. I mean, we did some brutal pre-seasons down the police academy here at Alberton, and the trips we used to do down Victor Harbour.
And of course, I didn't play in the AFL era here, but David Armfield's pre-seasons, I still hear a lot of players that transgressed over both sides. They were the pits back then, weren't they?
Ooh,
he's got a lot to answer for. David's got a lot to answer for, and he was punished correctly.
It was funny you mentioned that, too. One of the first year, I must have been 14 or 15, I come down here to training. It was Sandboard Cup down here. And I'm watching from, you know, the guys, and it's at the end of training, and I've seen... Phelpsy, Abba, yourself, it was probably Mars or something, drag this guy, it was a really wet night, and they're dragging this guy across the ground, they're ripping off his clothes. This is all happening at the end of the train.
Yeah, that's correct.
And it was this angry man with a moustache, and that was David Arnford.
So you learned early.
I thought, I reckon he deserves it, the way he's been yapping, you know, that voice he had.
Oh, it's annoying. Yeah.
And that was my first experience of the boys having a bit of fun with David.
Because your connection to Port Adelaide is actually quite amazing. You're actually related to the boys somehow.
So Russ and Greg's and Sandy's mother was awake.
I love that vaccine.
Yeah, so her father, Stewie, and my grandpa were brothers.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Stewie Wakeland lived on that.
So you're always
old age of 92. Yeah.
You're always
born. Yeah, you didn't realise it until you sort of got into your teens and said, wow, you would come down here and see that picture of the boys up in the rooms. And that to us sort of gave a real
connection.
It did.
Absolutely.
So tell
me about 94. Do you get straight in? You're in the lineup straight away, first trial game.
Well, there were some good players. Even the young Justy Sheehan was playing centre-half back. You know, Meadie was obviously a great player. They were using him in the ruck and centre-half back. And yeah, Jack gave me the first chance. We were round one out at Central Districts.
Right.
I was playing on Simon Lurse.
Yes.
So we're drove out, got lost on the way out. So I ended up at Parabank Shopping Centre. I was with a mate and I said, you know where you're going? He goes, I've got no idea. I've never been to Northern Suburbs before. So.
Wow.
So anyway, it was good. We had a great win. I had a really good game. And then I actually fractured my collarbone in round two out here against South. And then missed about 3 or 4 weeks. But anyway, I had that opportunity. I knew I could play at the level. I'd had a taste of it in years gone past in pre-season games. And I just knew I had to just keep hanging in there. And when I got back from the collarbone, because we won the first three of the year.
That's right.
But I think we lost about 6 or 7 out of the next 9 or so.
Yeah, it wasn't a good run.
Wasn't a great run. I remember having meetings in here. Remember that house, the house out the back here?
Yep.
You knew when you had meetings at the house.
Yeah, they were serious.
Wasn't much.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, 18, you'd look for the comfort of the senior players and the positiveness of the players because Jack had just given us an absolute stripping down. I remember distinctly it was a game we lost to Westies at on a Friday night. It was
a
wet
night. Yeah,
and we went down by the last kick of the night.
Correct.
But that was a real low point, but then we just kept building. And we won an incredible, I think we won 9 in a row or something by an average of 50-odd points. And it was just building.
There was a very interesting turning point in your career in that moment in time. Where we are in the middle of that slump, we lose a game, and what would John Cale want you to do Sunday morning if we'd lost? What would he want you to do?
He would want you to be walking through that door there, Tim, into these rooms before 9 o'clock.
Oh, yes, he would.
Preferably not 1 minute past.
No,
or one
preferably
second
not.
Past.
So that particular morning, we had lost to Glenelg now. What also made it a bit spicier was that Choco was coaching Glenelg, and we lost, and it is now, you've got to be here, you've got to be here. So I think I was up at about 6 a.m. because I was captain and I was pretty nervous. I get in here and I distinctly always was, you know, my spider sense was always tingling about who wasn't in the room. And I looked around, I didn't see a D. Wakeland, I didn't see a Troy Olsen. And lucky for you, probably, we get the biggest spray going around. But as we've been told what we have to do, which was, it was 15 laps with, I think it was 30 and 30 at each end, 30 sit-ups, 30 push-ups at each end. Yeah. So this is a massive, massive session. And we've had to go out there to do that. As we're going out, Troy Olsen started to try and come in the door. And Jack has just slammed the door on him and said, you're not coming in, because he was about 10 minutes late.
Yep.
And just slammed the door on him, locked him out, bang. So, and then Jack's shot off, very angry. So we've gone out and done that session. And then me and Roger are out on the oval, captain, vice-captain, talking. And I look up on the hill And here comes a little Darryl Lakeland. looking very sheepish.
Yeah. I still remember
Jack. Do you remember
Jack
that?
Now. I still remember Jack now. And I think he said to you, don't want to talk to him. Just sort him out.
Sort him out.
Just go and get it done.
And so, what happened? Because we just finished our 15 laps.
Yeah, well, I think you ran another 15 with me. I never thank you for that.
And you know what the beauty of that was? I made Roger do it. Roger had no intentions of doing another 15. He would have sat you down and had a good stern talking to you, but he did not want to do it. And I said, Roger.
He spoken to me.
Oh, he's still filthy on you today. He's still filthy on you today. Oh, fuck, that was bloody gold. But in your first go, and a lot of players struggle with this, and we spoke to a foolish guy called Brian Lees the other day. He's told some stupid story about myself. But who helped you with your jersey? Because doing a lace-up's not easy, is it?
Yeah, yeah. I actually brought my lace-up tonight, Timmy.
How good is this?
My beautiful lace-up.
How good? This is what the time machine's all about.
This is time machine.
And what kills me?
Body number 15.
That is still filthy from that day.
Yeah, hasn't been washed. So a bit of grip over there.
Look at the Seton Hotel, at which
a lot of West End draft.
Seton Hotel, Boyd connection again.
Yes. Yep.
Bloody hell. Have a look at that.
And I think I wore that for about 5 days straight.
but your first time, who gives you what happened?
Yeah, it was one of them. I suppose as a player, you look for them, that consistency through the year, but it just, I'd been lacing my jumper up in 19s and whatever, but it was just that start of that year in the pre-season, Bobby Clayton was always around, free man. So he started lacing. Bobby laced it the best. Probably. So I thought, I can't lace it as well as Bobby. So I'd always get Bobby, and Bobby would lace my jumper every game.
We're talking grand final, never?
Yeah, grand final. Every game through 94. It was the 94 season. So so Bobby, and you'd always have that ritual. I'd round him up sort of be half an hour before, and when you start to get serious, and he'd lace it up, he'd do a little knot at the bottom.
That's
and
it.
Beautiful.
Unbelievable.
And then right through to grand final that year.
That's incredible.
And I haven't laced up one since.
So, yeah. So it sort of became almost like your routine, your pre-game routine.
It was.
Getting ready.
Yeah, it was. And you had them rituals with some of your real close teammates. Yeah. And then Tiles and I had some rituals. We played a lot of footy down back that year.
Yeah.
But that was a really special thing when you reflect back on it, because Bobby was really special person in our club and with our family, really.
Yeah.
For all us three boys coming across from the peninsula.
But that's classic Bobby, though, isn't it?
It is.
He would do that, and you know, it's the first time I've ever heard that story.
Yeah.
And it's just classic Bobby, though, that classic he would do no
and,
dramas.
He'd always be floating around, and then wakes ready to go.
Yep.
Okay.
Because he would have been looking for you, by
Because he had that routine. And you'd always know the timing, because he was always, you know, on the clock, and Keezy on the clock.
Yeah.
So.
How did you, like, you're coming into a back line of, there's some experienced heads in there. You've got Paul Northeast, you've got Roger, George, who else was in there at that stage? Would have been Tiles, went back there that
Tiles
year.
Tiles went back.
That mm-hmm. year, you, your late yourself. Year. Mm-hmm. And a Stephen Carter mm-hmm. would have been the other younger guy with you.
Yeah, well, Carter and I played Tool Cup together, so we were great mates through that period. And we had a lot of turnover at the end of 93, because Coochie had retired. There was probably a handful, half a dozen guys, Braden Lyle, Cockatoo Collins, the Bond Boys, Shane. A lot of these guys went out of the system. So we got in guys like Malik Hallis, Scotty Sporting, who ended up being very good players. Obviously that core group was there, but then they blooded a lot of us young guys.
Simon Peddler,
Olsen, Karts really played his first full year. And then you brought in Malik Hallis, guys, and young Andrew McLeod in the back half of the
That's
year.
That's right, yes.
What a move that was. So it was us guys were there playing our part. You know, we thought, how good's this? And then as it started building in that back half of the year, you thought, God, there's just something going on here. And you got so much confidence out of the core group of guys like yourself and Rog and Hutz and Tiles and that. And Tiles was yet to plant a flag amongst that bunch. Had to start off the year really strong, so that was a yeah, build into a very, very special ending for the year.
So that final series was one of the most, what would you say, probably one of the most intense and difficult that I played in, because we played the qualifying final and we draw.
Yeah.
And we all came in, we didn't actually know what was going on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we actually had to play 5 minutes each way to go again and get through. Now,
yeah.
we win it, but geez, it took a bit of hours.
Oh,
it took a bit of hours, didn't it?
It was a damp night too, and I remember coming into that time, I remember I'm playing half back. Hugh Reimers has come off the bench. Hadn't been on the whole game. Come on in extra time.
Oh.
And I'm chasing his ass. He's running like a gazelle. I cannot get near him. I thought, oh, no, I'm going to cost us this game. And the ass was twitching. And anyway, we did enough. I think Mallis scored and Scotty scored and we got over. But we were
that took a lot out.
It took a lot out of us. So that was the qualifying.
And then into the second semi. We played the second semi.
Against the Eagles, who had smacked us Anzac Day game and early in the year. We'd come back, I reckon it was the last game of the year. We'd smacked him out here.
Yep.
And that was a real sense of relief. But we come up against him and
we got a bit of odd.
Goes a little touch. I heard someone talking about that, they thought we hung in there until 3/4 time. I remember they were just a didn't they have some depth?
Yeah.
They were a cut above that year, I thought. And they had an incredible side, huge amount of depth and speed, they had skill and they had firepower up front.
And then we lose that, of course, and we have to go back through the prelim. Now, Thursday night selection night, always is. It's always an exciting time. I used to wear coloured socks just so I get noticed.
I don't think they needed a notice there, too. And the skipper.
Yeah,
you never know.
You
had a bit of an ankle early in the year, though, didn't you?
Injury. Yeah, probably missed a quarter. And but that's the night selection, and you don't want on a Thursday night a phone call, do you?
No.
Did you get one?
I've never had a phone call on a Thursday night until we'd come in at a prelim. And I'd come off, I'd had an ordinary game. And in the semi, a lot of us did. Anyway, I got the dreaded call. Keezy used to do that selection committee up there.
Who was our team manager?
Yeah. So Daryl just happened to be at home Thursday night, quite night. Jack wants to talk to you. I thought, oh, I remember being so nervous.
Yeah.
When I was speaking to Keezy, but then I got this feeling of just this relaxed feeling, and I still feel it now. And it was just like, you know what, it's been a good year. What have we got to lose? And Jack goes, "Wait, tell me why you should be playing this week in the team." And it just came out. I said, "Well, we're playing Centrals, Jack. I've had a great record against them, so I'm nervous. I want to play on him. I've trained well this week, and give me a chance." He goes, "Yep." Hang up, click. And then I thought, oh, fuck.
Did you get an answer?
You beat that out. I did not get an answer. So anyway, I got up in the morning. First thing I did, got up early, went and bought the advertiser. There's my name and the team. And Bruce Peddle had come back into the side after being dropped. I reckon he was dropped for the second semi. Anyway, I was in, and I come in, and I did a really good job on Lurs, and we all played well, won by 90 points in that prelim, and it was a great win, and we were set for the big one. Yeah.
When you were coming into that, you said yourself you didn't have a great one in the second semi.
Yeah.
Are you just a completely different mindset coming out of the GF?
Absolutely, because Jack had said to me coming in, and so Jack used to like to needle and just get a few things to get a reaction. And he'd said, "Oh, you know, the Eagles, they reckon they got you covered. They reckon you're the weak link in the club." So that sort of affected my mindset for a few weeks. I remember looking back on that. But once I got selected for that prelim, it was like on. And once I got through that prelim and had played well, I thought, "Oh, well, we're in a grand final. I'm in my first grand final. I'm 18 years of age. But what have we got to lose?" Until 20 minutes in.
Six goals.
6 goal 2 to...
And she was raining down there, wasn't it? I mean, I'm talking about the footy, not the weather.
It was raining on all fronts, and they were just setting up so well behind the ball. On a wet day, we had quite a tall forward line as well, and we played a tall forward line for most of the year, and that's part of the reason Tiles didn't get up front. He got him to come down. I think it was amazing, some of the selections that year by Jack and the selection committee, really, to make the moves that they did. Dropping guys through the year, just trying to find that mix right late into the finals, with even Steve coming back in for the granny for Troy Holt,
who played
a very good prelim, had a very good season, hugely talented player. So, we're there, and made that move. We're top heavy, it's a wet day, and then the sun starts to shine a little bit. And there was a very skillful centreman, Rover, who was in his first year as captain.
Who was brutally attacked.
May have just given a little bit of a, I don't know. I don't know if there's any footage.
It's called self-defence.
Self-defence.
Self-defence, yes. Your Honour.
Glenn Freeborn.
That's
it?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct.
He was at you all day until the last quarter.
Yeah, Darryl Ball has caused that fight. I don't know about that. He caused that fight. But
we got that goal. Scotty got the next one, got smashed in the ground, just kicking one from the goal square. And that gave us a little bit of hope at the end of that first
quarter. It's a bit of hope, yeah. Yeah. I thought by half time the game's still in the balance. We didn't make any ground, but it was still in the balance. And I felt good going into the third quarter. I felt good, and I do distinctly remember making a comment about a couple of their players and how unfit they looked and how much they were blowing. And I said to the umpire something about you better get some oxygen for this little fella. I said, I think he's got a blow of power. I said, they're gone, boys, they're gone. And that was halfway through the third quarter. I felt like that momentum was so strong in our favour by then.
Well, in that third quarter, it was just brutal. I actually watched it a week ago. I went and watched that. First time I'd watched the full game. And that first 15, 20 minutes, that was absolutely brutal. It was
good footy, wasn't it?
It was fantastic to watch.
I was
watching the video, and you can feel it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I felt as though when Eagles went forward, they're a lot more open forward line, but I felt though we were just getting Daisy Ballas, just getting tackles in. And Steve was in, he had an incredible game. Scotty Spaulding played a very good game, and we just kept at it. And we just, the momentum started to swing, and we kept hitting on goal, but we couldn't score.
Yeah.
And then finally, Steve kicked that beautiful goal late, and right on the siren.
Gave us a real good vibe going in.
Got us within 12 points. Yeah.
Now, there's a couple of marks that you take in that game, but one in particular, running back with a fly. And, it's what people expect of Port Adelaide players, isn't it? You're going back and you can't deviate and you've got to take it and all the rest of it. I've noticed in your career and in your AFL career, there was a whole plan built on you. They kick out a fullback, they send the ruckman one side, they would all run that side, they'd kick out to you and say a Montgomery perhaps.
Yeah.
One would block, one would mark. That went on for the whole 2004, didn't
it?
I mean, I couldn't believe they thought they knew it, but you were just forever taking that ball, bang, bang. So good overhead. What I liked about that 94 grand finals, you never let the ball over the back, did you ever? Now, I remember talking about this one night.
Yes.
Do you remember in Darwin?
Yes.
We went up there, called footy, and Josh Carr, yourself, and you were having a chat in Mitchell Street, as you do, in Darwin, and having a hot dog. And you said, I'll never forget you giving me the biggest blast in an internal trial game. And I apologised to you, didn't I? I said, no, sorry, Darryl, I was terrible on the field. I was always going off my head. But you said, no, don't apologise.
That's right. I said, don't apologise, Tim. I said, thank you.
What happened?
Yeah, we were down at Smosh. I distinctly remember it was a pre-season game. And out of wing, I was playing in the ruck. at that stage. I've gone up for this grab. It's gone through my hands, pathetic. And there's our skipper, who had a great blend of being your mate and Brandon off. But when he was on the ground, he was
a little harsh.
He said, "Darryl, if you get there up, get up there, just mark the thing." And I'm looking up and he'll go, "Yep, he's right."
Don't ever let that ball go to the back.
You know, when I'm up there, you got to keep it front and you got to keep it forward. So, you know, the other lessons you learn, you remember them. And sometimes it's delivered that way and you remember it forever. So
you told me you never let mine over the back ever again.
No, I wish I could say that.
I don't know if you're sure about this, Darryl, or not, but let me tell you, it's time like this, you need a little help from your friends.
You do.
And I'm not talking about the Beagles. Yeah. I'm talking about Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, Tyre Power. Because it's Timmy G's Tyre Power time machine. That's what it is. And these guys help you. They're committed. They're always committed.
Yeah.
They're committed to the essential services. New tyres, wheel alignment, free 5-minute tyre check. Just go in there, drive in, bang, 5 minutes. You're out, all checked. Still, great savings when you need them. The best brands. Stay safe on the road, Darryl, all the time. Got a long weekend coming up, so just make sure we do that.
Four-wheel drive tyres.
They'll do that for you.
Yeah.
Four-wheel drive tyres, no problems at all. Tyre Power dealer near you, don't worry. Yeah. Thank you very much. Now we're getting on to stage two of your career. We're getting right down into it. 94, we win the flag. How was that moment for you, everybody around you, your mates, your family, everything. How does it feel, siren time? You're a young man. I think you're 19 years of age.
Yeah, I think 18, 19. And, it was a real sense of relief. It's the first real league season. It's a bloody long year, isn't it? And I was studying, I was at university doing pharmacy, and it was just a big year. We bought our first house in Woodville, and it was just... But for the family to be there, and my brother had come back from Melbourne, it was his first season over at the Saints, and just such a special time. And you reflect on it now, it was just an incredible period, because it was just this freedom. You'd finished the year, you'd had the ultimate success. You know, and to play with all these great experienced players of Port Adelaide. And then we get to come back here on Grand Final night and do all the, you know, the unveiling of the chimney and to do all that, experience that whole week.
How did you go with the routine? Because it was a routine by then, invented by Greg Phillips.
It was a great routine. And there'd be something going on every night.
Yeah.
Every night. And we'd be either, you know, we'd be here, we'd be having a bath in the truth bath, we'd be the unveiling, the boys would be lining up for tats at the tat shop. We'd be heading down to Coochie's pub.
Oh, coincidentally.
And just settling in for another session. And then there was a... And then you'd have the SNFL, you know, premiership dinner,
wasn't that a great night?
That was a fantastic night, a really good night. Got to really acknowledge the key people from that year.
It was amazing because it was a, you know, sort of a black tie show.
Yeah.
With blue collar people.
Yes. Yes. So true. Yeah, and that was, and it was a. I remember that night being another fun night. The last rat bags, but. We were there amongst the SNFL, who we were absolute arch rivals with the previous 3 or 4 years, and leading into 94 with the announcement
that we got the second license
imminent.
Yeah,
within over the next 8 to 12 weeks. Yeah,
so,
a fantastic period in the club.
When you shoot off, because you're drafted by then, you're going to go to St Kilda. When do you leave Adelaide Shores and head over to Melbourne?
Yeah, well, I'd actually, I was offered a contract to stay with Port because we thought we potentially would be in 96.
That's
so
right.
I would have only had to play 95 season. But I just felt that I needed to go away. St Kilda were really keen for me to come across. And I just felt, well, I've got nothing to lose. I'll go across there, play some games.
Shane's there.
Yeah, Shane's there. There's an opportunity to slot into that back line at St Kilda. And they were turning over their list, and I thought, why not? And I can always come back in 2, 3, 4 years' time. And so that I moved over in January 95.
Now, the Saints, bit of mixed fortunes. Tony Lockett's still there?
It was part of the trade. His last season was '94.
You go over there, but a little slow to begin with, but then there's some real momentum underneath Stan Elves, who's the coach, isn't there? And
there is.
Some big names there still, like Lowe, you had Burke, who's a great player.
Yeah.
Of course, Robin Harvey.
Winmar.
Some characters like Austin Jones and blokes like that.
Yeah.
Justin Peckett. And Tony Brown.
Tony Brown,
Being a Magpies captain as well. So
Joel Smith, Matty Lappin, there was a lot of talent on the list. And there was a lot of us young guys coming through who were sort of 18 years to 21. Stevie Zilla was drafted.
That's right,
Played against him in the grand final, become, great mates and still are great mates. So we had a core group and we kept building over the next sort of 3 to 4 years. And, the issue, like with a lot of clubs who have sort of lacked success over a longer period, when the pressure comes, there's not that foundation to fall back on. And inevitably that was what happened. Politics get in the way and they moved on a coach and Stan Elves gave me a great opportunity in my first part of my career. And he got moved on at the end of '98 and I thought he was a fantastic influence on that club. Very good coach, very structured, and a great fella.
Mm.
And that's footy. That's footy club.
So I remember once hearing somebody ask you, Darryl, when did you come back and play for the Power? And you said, when we started winning. And I love that line. I think that is a Port Adelaide mentality if I've ever heard one. But that was fantastic. But it's true. You come back in 01. And gee whiz, we start winning.
Yeah, look, a big part of the reason coming back, I get a little bit nervous these days, the fact that the club gave up pick number 4 for me. It was sort of, I'd come off a really poor season and we won 3.5 games.
So.
It was, my confidence wasn't where it needed to be coming into that one season, but once I got back here and familiar surroundings, and I started to feel comfortable and started to build my fitness in that season. And we played a couple of finals at the end, and but I knew there was such a great group coming through. There was a young, really powerful, talented group coming through with some experience at the top end, and then some 25, 26-year-olds like myself coming in.
Yeah, which was perfect, wasn't it, really? And then a bit later on you get Choppy back and you get Hardwick, Damien comes in to the side. And that really bolstered up that experience, didn't it?
It did, and that first year Hardwick was back here and we had Choppy half-forward on the wing. It was just, we had an incredible year in 2002, 2003.
People start looking over their shoulder, don't they?
They do, and that gave us that real hardness and belief. Them guys have been in flags, they've played in premierships, they've been to Melbourne, and it was just another element. And Choco was always ahead of the game with Rob Snowden and Bucky, just bringing them guys into building on that squad every year. And they weren't just complacent the fact that we had a talented group, which we did, but we brought in guys like them guys when we were getting injuries to Primus and Franco, and a lot of people forget the quality that were injured through that time. Brendan Lay missed probably 2 seasons through that period as well.
Yeah.
So we kept building. We had an amazing fitness group led by Andrew Russell, and the momentum was building through that period.
How frustrated were you in, say, especially 02, 03, when we did ourselves a disservice by losing that first final, getting into the other side of the draw? I mean, how frustrated were you at that time thinking, guys, we are the best team, we can win this, but we're just not getting it right at the beginning?
Yeah, we were so close in that first final in 02. 01, we'd gone in the finals, we weren't we're very young still, immature.
Yeah.
But 02 and 03, they were the ones we really gave away, and it really started in that Collingwood game at Footy Park. We had every opportunity to come back as poorly as we played. But it was frustrating, and getting back on the reverse group and coming up against Brisbane, who were through that period just an awesome team, awesome, so tough, very experienced.
And
I forget how experienced they were and how talented they were, but they were just pipping us. So it's it didn't start, you know, 04 season, just, it wasn't a perfect start, but you could feel building. You could feel our health was getting really good in the back end of the season, and we had all the right guys coming back, and albeit we missed Franco and Primus through injury, one of the big things was we all had amazing ruck depth with Brogan and Lane.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 04 season, Brogues had a fantastic year, sort of All-Australian form. Lady, we know, is All-Australian, so, and we had a lot of talent through that midfield. We used to win a lot of games very easily, and I think that probably cost us 02, 03. We're winning games so easy, and we had an amazing, obviously, centre half forward and a pretty handy Dower back line. But a big move in 04, on top of an amazing season by Tred Ray and James and guys like that, was Chad Collins, the centre half back.
Yeah.
It gave us a real bit of extractor down there. We'd been a Dower back line. That gave us a real aggrader down there that we probably hadn't had.
Yeah. And you're right, just changed the dynamic of the whole back line.
Yeah, you all of a sudden, you know, I would take that sort of key go-to, but then Chad could just take intercept mark, playing more up the ground and playing that sort of second defender.
Any forward doesn't like a backman that can do the things that he does. Play off them a bit, end up standing on their heads, taking marks. Yeah. That's frustrating for a forward.
Absolutely.
And he could do it. So
in
that preliminary final of 04, it must have been what the...
Yeah.
Until Gary, thankfully, kicks 100.
It was like...
That was a momentum breaker, wasn't it? Circuit breaker, bang.
I remember going into the game and I was saying to Dean Bailey, Dean, do you want... When Fraser is standing the mark, where do you want me? Because if I'm out there trying to mark her, which I've been doing all year, that's fine, but you need someone to cover. Anyway, within 10 minutes, the ball's come back through. He's ended up with a couple. I trailed him in on one to get his third, which was his 100th. And then I think he hit two.
Did you do that on purpose?
Yeah.
So you get 100. Exactly.
But... yeah, we had a fair player. Roger James was kept him head to head with Harvey. That was a pretty awesome contest in that first half. He was keeping us in it, and we dragged ourselves back. And then, like any game, mate, you've played so many, it comes down to the moments. And we're pretty lucky. We had one of our legends pop up at the end of the day.
He did it right.
Not a bad player.
Gee, Wang Lee. and a great moment with Shawnee Burgoyne down the other end.
Incredible.
Just
against
Guerra.
So.
Amazing stuff, but we get through. Were you then confident? Finally, broken the hoodoo, won the prelim. Are you confident going? Because a lot of the boys told me that they basically said, once we won the prelim, we knew we could win the grand final.
Yeah, we knew. We knew we had the talent. It was such a sense of relief, and you could feel it around the group. You could feel it straight away after the game. Everyone, obviously, so happy. And for a lot of them guys, I've been lucky enough to play in 97 in the grand final. We'd sort of put that group, we'd come together. We'd had some disappointment in 02, 03. There's this huge sense of relief. So we're coming into that, and we just had such a fun week on the training track. We get over to Melbourne, everyone's very relaxed, and Choco was relaxed while she bails. They're all very relaxed about it. Probably a little bit different to previous campaigns, but it was just fantastic. So we knew we were a real chance, and we knew they were aging a bit. We'd had our fair share of injuries too, but we knew we'd been building in that last 8 weeks coming into finals, so we had a bit of physical momentum. And we thought we could get at them with the legs. It was going to be a warm day, which it was. And I think the legs got us over the line.
Because there was some point about just being close at half time, wasn't there? Just make sure we're within contact on the scoreboard. And it was only a point, wasn't it? Something like that at half time.
Yeah, and I think they kicked four in a row in that second quarter. We'd got off to a good start. Yeah. They pinned us back and... They had some amazing firepower still.
Mac and Madison,
their midfielders were goal-kicking midfielders as well. So, but we felt we ran them hard, we ran the lines, and we were able to beat it when it counted.
I'm able to call the game, commentary. I'm up in the box, and because, like you said, the ground was being renovated, we're in this ridiculous sort of pocket, if you like, and I'm looking right over the top of you, second term there, standing Alistair Lynch, and the moment happens, the meltdown happens. I cannot tell you, I was almost like a parent. I wanted to leap out of that box and dive full down and just strangle him to death. I could not believe what was going on. I could not believe. Did you have any sense of that moment happening, or was it, had you known that he's obviously blown a driver, or was it any indication whatsoever? Because it was bizarre.
Well, I did an interview back in our 10-year anniversary, but he said something before the game as we're walking down after the second siren. I remember him distinctly turning to me and he said, don't try anything today, Wakeland. He said, it's my last game. Try anything, I'll knock your effing head off. And so that was before the game, but we'd had some run-ins and, you know, physical fullback versus full forward, that sort of scenario. But as soon as I saw him pull up, Tredis took that mark in that pocket, back pocket. I knew he pulled up short, looked like a quad. I thought, beautiful. There'd been a few things he'd given away a free to me earlier. There was a few signs. You know, you look for them signs, especially in a big game like that. And I thought, oh, that was just another sign. And but I didn't see the sign. I didn't see
it's
the sign.
Sign. With the first haymaker that came.
With the 10 haymakers. So I remember after about the fourth, I thought, I'll just bunker down here. I'll just try and grab his jumper.
Yep.
And he might throw, you know, a couple. I thought, the prick,
he
kept throwing.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll just grab the back of his head, try and get something in, you know. And then after about 10, we're sitting there both blowing.
Yeah, of course. Fighting's no good when we're in fog.
But then we got on with the job. He went off and I went on to Brown. And then that freed up Cornsey down back.
Perfect.
Might have put Bradshaw forward, but and then it was just a bit of mix and match as the game went on.
What point do you go?
Must have been, I think it was when King has kicked that goal on his left, around that same time Dewey kicked his. I actually remember taking a mark, I think Bish kicked one out to the forward pocket. And I'm walking back, sort of nearly half daydreaming. I think, geez, I better get switched. I better turn around and actually kick this thing, you know?
Yeah.
But it was probably about 5 minutes to go in the game. But that was probably the moment. And I thought, God, how good is this? We've finally done it. Yeah.
On an AFL flag, you know, incredible scenes afterwards. And I think some of the unbelievable scenes, that there's a couple of great moments that I sort of distinctly remember. You know, I know everybody talks about Choco coming down and doing the tie thing, but Choco going up to his mum at the fence was a really special moment for me. I thought that was really touching. And then you catching Shane at the fence was really, you know, quite unbelievable. And it's you know, it's been shown a lot of times. But did you go searching? Did you know where they might be, or was it by accident?
Yeah, purely by accident. I'd seen a number of the partners and families down on the boundary, and I thought, geez, it'd be nice if I saw the family. And then as we're sort of on our victory lap, it was sort of, it was quite bizarre that, they'd obviously moved their way down, and parents were there, my older brother, my now wife, and then Shane was there. Yeah, so, you know, you share the good times, but he'd obviously had the disappointment of losing 0-2 and 0-3. So we were there with the tears of down the change rooms in the losing grand finals. And, you know, you feel for it because we all know how hard we work. You all know the sacrifices your family makes and the commitments. So that was always a hard thing. So that was a really amazing moment.
I sneaked my way down into the rooms afterwards, along with a few other past players, but I actually had a role to play. I was actually doing radio interviews, and I remember panning over, and there you were, with Shane, the whole family's there, and I sneak up, and I get the microphone into your face and start interviewing you. I've got to find that somewhere. Hopefully I've got it somewhere.
I've got there's a great photo of you and I, and you're there interviewing me, and I must... the advertiser photographer, you've got my phone in hand, I've just given this one, and you're standing over to my other end. So that's in my office at home. So
oh, God, I'll have to come and have a look at that. But I just remember you saying at that point, Timmy, can you believe it? I've got premiership bookends, 94, 2004. And that was sort of, I didn't even think of that. And it was like, wow, a decade apart, two premierships with Port Adelaide and two amazing premierships, because one was trying to get us into the AFL, and one is when we're in the AFL. That's an amazing record you got.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day, it was like Forrest Gump, the movie.
Yeah. He's gone through his life. I was a bit like
he's gone through all these things, and he's there on all these moments.
Yes.
And that's sort of, it's a bit of like that with, I come across as a kid, got to watch you guys in the 1990 Grand Final, which is fantastic. And to see where our club got to now and to be play a small part through that journey, that's been really special. So
you've sort of seen it all.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, you get to see it all. And more importantly, you get to know all the great characters and the people who've played the parts along the way. And they're all just ordinary, normal, great people, great quality people through all that period. And I'm proud to say they're my friends.
Now, there's two questions to finish. I want you to tell me celebrations 94 versus 04.
Oh, no, 94 without a doubt.
We were allowed to be, I think, back in those days. Yes. So, tick, 94.
And a big part of that, Timmy, 94, we had an amazing couple of weeks, but we had the Hawaii footy trip planned.
Yes, that's
right. I couldn't afford to go, and I had exams coming up as well. I found every excuse, and at the end of the day, I didn't have any cash.
Yeah.
And then, as Rizzo called him as CEO at the time, Bucky Blood out of a stone cutting. amazingly, I think it was the day of the chimney unveiling. He had us all, before we started, we got the bus into the chimney, we're in here. And Bucky said, boys, it's one out of the box. We didn't budget for making a grand final, let alone winning it. We're putting the prize money or some of the profits from grand final night back to the players. So every player who played a game that year got it distributed. So I ended up with another couple grand in the pocket. I was able to go to Hawaii and have one of the great trips with all my mates. So did we celebrate?
Yeah.
We had a great celebration.
I've seen some photos. Darryl Wakel, it's been a pleasure to have you in here on Timmy G's Tyre Power Tyre Machine, let me tell you. And it's been an absolute pleasure to be here.
Pleasure, Timmy.
In lockdown. You know the Hemsworths? You know the three brothers? Which one do you reckon is the other one here? I didn't realise I was so short. Hell, that's a great part.
That's a great shot.
It's our 150th. Happy birthday, Port Adelaide.